The IND Files, the ultimate Colts podcast with Nate Lundy.
To talk Colts, we bring in Derek Schultz. You find him on Twitter at Schultz97.5 WNDE there in Indianapolis. Derek, really appreciate you spending some time with us. Let's start here. Preseason in the books, four games. Your assessment of what you've seen out of that team so far for the last 6 to 8 weeks.
Number one, did not look very good, that's for sure, Nate, but that's not really a change from anything that we've seen in the previous, 15 or 20 postseasons. The Colts' MO during the preseason has been to look really, really bad and then turn it on in the regular season, and that's why we've seen this team be really consistently in the mix. I know last year aside, but this was a team that rolls out of bed seemingly every year and either wins or contends in the division, gets into the playoffs, double-digit wins, all of that, that's come to be kind of the expectation, and that's after many 0-4, 1-3 kind of level preseasons. But this one's problematic because the starters have looked so bad. You know, it's one thing to have your number twos or your number threes or even the guys that are just roster fillers, number fours, not look good because who cares? They're backups or they're not even going to make the team anyway. But to have the starters look as bad as they did, notably in the Philadelphia game, which is the third preseason game, which is always the one where there's the most value, I think, of what you see, it's certainly problematic. So people are very much on edge here. They don't know what to think about having Andrew Luck back healthy and if that's going to be this cure-all for a roster that, to be honest with you, is just not very good on paper. They're old at a lot of key positions. They don't have a ton of young talent, and the young talent that they do have is really banged up. So I think people are not pessimistic per se here in Indy, because it's not really the fans' nature here to be pessimistic. But I think they're very much feeling like they're on shaky ground as we head into Sunday's opener against Detroit.
Well, you talk about the age of the team. One of those sits at the running attack, and that's Frank Gore. Last year, Derek, I think he averaged right around 3.5, maybe 3.7 yards a carry. For this team, you know, they need a rushing attack to be able to help out Andrew Luck and those receivers. Do you have any confidence in the running game? Do you have confidence in Frank Gore?
I don't have a ton of confidence in the running game, but it's not because of Frank Gore. A lot of that has to do with their turnstile offensive line that hasn't been good in either run blocking or pass protection. Really, they've been bad all around. And that's another area where they're banged up. Jack Muhort, who was their second-round pick a couple of years ago, who they really like, had a bad injury in the Philadelphia game. It was originally feared he was out for the season. Turns out it's only going to be a couple of weeks, but still they're going to miss him at least for the opener and probably potentially for the first month of the season. Anthony Costanzo, who they awarded with a big contract extension, hasn't looked like he's been worthy of that contract. He had a disastrous second half of last year and so far has not looked good in the preseason. And then they've remade the right side of the offensive line seemingly every year for the last 2 or 3 years, and nothing seems to click over there. So, yeah, you're right. Frank Gore's old. He's 33. I don't believe there's been an 1,000-yard rusher at that age in about 30 years. So it's been a long time coming. And it's been a long time coming for the Colts just in general for an 1,000-yard rusher. But it's kind of like a chicken or the egg sort of thing. Is the running game ineffective because Gore is old and ineffective? Well, I guess that's part of it. He's certainly not the player that he was. But I think a lot more of it has to do with their problems up front on the offensive line.
Sticking with the offensive theme here for a minute, Derek, the receiving core, you know, we're so used to seeing big wide receiver numbers. You know, even if we just talk fantasy football, we're used to seeing big wide receiver numbers out of the Colts over the years with Peyton Manning and even with the early years with Andrew Luck. Is the talent there, and it's just a matter of getting Luck back on track? What's your assessment of the receivers?
Their talent is there, but there's no depth. They really like their top three. T.Y. Hilton has been, we go back and forth over arguing whether or not he's a number one receiver. His numbers certainly dictate that he's a number one guy, and he's been as productive as just about anybody not named Antonio Brown or Julio Jones in the league over the past 3 or 4 years. So he's firmly entrenched there as Andrew Luck's go-to target. Dante Moncrief had a little bit of a coming out last year and is really progressing, and they're hoping that he can take another step forward and lock down that number two spot. And then the jury's still very much out on 2015 first-round pick Philip Dorsett, who got banged up last year and didn't really get to show what he could do. But I know the coaching staff is really high on him out of the slot because he's a speed guy out of Miami. But they actually took a flyer on two undrafted guys to go ahead and round out their wide receiver depth chart. One of those guys is Chester Rogers, who had a really nice preseason and now looks like the number four. And then Quan Bray is also going to be kind of their return man slash number five emergency wide receiver. So that's essentially the rest of that group. But you feel good about Hilton. I think you feel good about Moncrief as a number two. Dorsett, you just don't really know. But the back end of the wide receiver talent, there just isn't much there. There is they have 1.5 go-to guys, to put it lightly, there in that wide receiver group.
Derek, does losing Kobe Fleener hurt?
Yes and no. Yes, in the sense that he's a big target and a guy that I think has all the makings to someday be a dynamic pass catcher. But, you know, Nate, it's funny because you look at Fleener and you look at his build, and I'm not trying to sound creepy here or anything, but, the guy's, 6'4", 6'5". If you went to a factory and you said, hey, build me a tight end, physically it would look like Kobe Fleener. But you keep waiting for him to wow you, and you keep waiting for the whole package to come together, and it just never really came together for him. So I think they felt like Dwayne Allen, who's far less flashy and less of a dynamic passing threat, is a guy that does more things well because he can catch the ball, he can block, he can do a lot of different things, whereas Fleener was really only a downfield threat. That's about all he could do. He certainly wasn't a blocker at all. So it was a hard decision for them to make, especially considering that Allen's had all kinds of injury issues. But I don't know necessarily if they're going to miss Fleener, because I just don't know if Fleener is ever going to be or was ever going to be the player that they thought they were getting out of Stanford a couple of years ago.
Make sure you're following him on Twitter. It's at Schultz97.5. Derek Schultz from WNDE in Indy is our guest here. Derek, when you look at the fan base that's a bit frustrated by what the Colts have done or maybe not done, it is part of that frustration come from the fact that the rest of the division has made some steps and has made some strides and is kind of catching up to where Indianapolis was a few seasons ago?
Yeah, the gravy train, as they say, is about to end for the Colts, because for so long it's been a, hey, go 500 against everybody else, but go 5-1 or 6-0 against your division, and boom, 10-win season or 11-win season by beating up on Jacksonville and on Tennessee and on Houston, who had never won in Indianapolis before last year. So I think there is frustration in the fact that everybody is catching up. I think in some ways with what Houston's done the past couple of years, I think you can say that Houston at the very least is right on the level of Indy, if not already past them. They've always just kind of been a quarterback away. Tennessee is still a work in progress, but they're moving forward. Jacksonville has the best skill position talent that they've had in many years. Probably have to go back to the Coughlin era with like Fred Taylor and Mark Brunell and guys like that to find the last time that they had this much skill position talent. So yeah, absolutely. People are apprehensive about the division, but I think more than that, Nate, it's that the Colts had been so good in the division for so long and have beaten up on those teams for so long that fans are waiting for them to take the next step. They don't really care about Jacksonville and Tennessee and Houston. They want to know how the Colts stack up against New England and Pittsburgh and Cincinnati and teams like, and Denver and teams like that, teams that have really been the true contenders in the conference over the past couple of years.
Does this feel like a division, the AFC South, where there really isn't a clear-cut team to run away with it, Derek, and that it's possible that 9-7 could wind up winning the division again, much the way people talk about the NFC East?
Yeah, absolutely, and you hit the nail on the head. I was just going to say it is the AFC equivalent of the NFC East, where I think the one exception is that in the NFC East, you could talk me into any of those four teams, even Dallas with the Romo injury. You couldn't talk me into Tennessee. Tennessee's not going to go from 2-14 to 10-6 or something crazy like that. So I think Tennessee clearly is a 5 or 6 win team, and that might be being
right.
Generous.
Right.
But I think, yeah, Houston is probably the front runner with what they have coming back and with Osweiler looking as good as he has and their confidence in him. Colts are in that mix, and Jacksonville, I think, absolutely is in that mix. They're a sexy dark horse pick to make a big leap. They were 5-11 last year, but they made a lot of strides. And like I mentioned with that skill position talent, I think that they're going to be maybe not a force, but certainly a threat to get to 8 or 9 wins, and that's all it's going to take.
Derek, to start off the year this weekend, obviously the afternoon game at home against the Lions, does it feel good to be starting off against a team that isn't necessarily a powerhouse but also is outside the division, where maybe you can shake some rust loose or you can get some things ready for the season before you actually dive into the division? Or would you rather actually be facing a Jacksonville or a Tennessee or a Houston right out of the gate?
No, that's a good point. I hadn't really thought about it that way, but I think it is advantageous, A, to be at home, of course, but B, to face somebody that it's not a division game, so it doesn't count twice and you don't feel like you have to be at your best right away. And I would say that actually about the first four or five games outside of the trip in Denver, if you really look at it, they've got Detroit this week. Then they week three, they're at home against San Diego. Then they go to the United Kingdom. They go to England to play Jacksonville. And then in week five, they have Chicago at home. So those are four teams there that I think are really kind of coin flip games. I think if you ask people, you know, Detroit is kind of viewed as an 8-8-ish team. Chicago's always 8-8. It feels like every single year that's where they are. And then San Diego's kind of in that mix as well, where they're never great. They're never bad. They're just kind of okay. And I think that the season for the Colts absolutely swings on those first five games. If they get out to a 4-1 start, because I'm not expecting them to go to Denver and win even with their quarterback situation. But if they get out to like a 4-1 start or at worst 3-2, I think you could start to see things kind of come together for them. And you could start to talk yourself into this being like a 9 or 10 win team. But if things go south early and with all the injuries, Vontae Davis and guys like that being out, and they start 2-3 or 1-4, then the season's going to be over before it even begins for them.
Great stuff. Derek Schultz covering the Colts for us on Twitter at Schultz97.5, WNDE there in Indianapolis. Derek, great stuff. Appreciate it. We'll talk to you again soon. Thanks for joining us on the podcast.
Anytime, man. Thanks.
Coming up next, we talk to the coach. Let's go around the NFL with Brian Billick.
Around the league.
It is time for us to go around the NFL, and we do that every week here on the NFL Files with the coach, Brian Billick. You follow him on Twitter, at Coach Billick. He's brought to us by our friends at SeatGeek. Coach, we are here at week one, and as I was making my notes getting ready to chat this week, I realized that we are sitting on a whole lot of quarterback news. So let's start with the trade. Your thoughts on Sam Bradford going to Minnesota?
I think it's a great move. I think it mainly is an indicator that shows you just how good Minnesota thinks they are. A lot of people coming in, including myself, thought they could be not only a playoff team as they were last year, but a Super Bowl contender. And I think Sam Bradford actually enhances that. It's tragic to lose Teddy Bridgewater the way they did, but they were still betting on Teddy Bridgewater to come a little bit. You know, he only had 14 touchdowns last year, and I think he was going to get there. I think Sam Bradford in this system, and I think that's an important part for his ability to turn around and hand the ball up to Adrian Peterson, make the big throws down the field, for them to play good defense, I think it's a great move for them.
And looking at what the Eagles then did, for some on the outside, Coach, it almost feels like the Eagles have said, okay, this is our season, maybe this isn't our season, but they're putting a lot of faith in Carson Wentz, who only took 39 snaps in the preseason. Are you surprised?
Not really. I am an IA, and I'm not. From the standpoint of anytime you take quarterback in the first round, you got to play that guy. I mean, otherwise, I was up at Philadelphia's training camp, and they seemed fully committed to not playing Carson Wentz if that's the way it came down. Remember, Doug Peterson was one who came in 1999 with the Philadelphia Eagles for Andy Reid to basically be a placeholder for Donovan McNabb, and he did that. Now, that was a 5-11 football team. And Don McNabb eventually took over. I'm a little surprised that they went to Carson Wentz this early, although the opportunity to turn Sam Bradford, I was critical of Philadelphia when they signed Sam Bradford and wondered what they were doing, then moved up to get the first round. But for them to recoup a first-round pick for Sam Bradford, I think they've been brilliant.
Yeah, I think overall when you look at that story, it worked out well for the Eagles. I knew that Minnesota was sitting on some extra picks, but obviously getting a first-rounder back was a big deal. Now let's go down to Dallas, Coach, where Dak Prescott will have the reins because of the injury to Tony Romo. You've had a chance to see him in the preseason. We know that all around the Metroplex, they're basically ready to put him in the Hall of Fame. They love him so much. But what have you seen from Dak Prescott that you think is going to be successful for him, and what do you still have concerns about?
Well, I think that optimism is well warranted, but let's not slam dunk him into the Hall of Fame just yet, okay? I mean, this young man doesn't know what's going to hit him. I think the difference, too, when you go back and you look at quarterbacks that have started in rookie years, let's go back to a great case study in 2008 when Joe Flacco and Matt Ryan took over as starting quarterbacks day one. Dak Prescott, Joe Flacco went in because of injury. They did not plan on starting him. and they actually ended up starting him, went to the playoffs. He had a solid year, not a great year, over 60%, a little better than one-to-one touchdown to interception, not stellar numbers, but showed that he could handle it. The difference being is Baltimore had a great defense. They had an established running game. Dallas doesn't have those things. They may have the running game. Obviously, the offensive line is Ezekiel Elliott. It could be a huge plus for them. But that defense has to be a concern. I think more is going to be asked of Dak Prescott than was asked of Joe Flacco, than even was asked of a Matt Ryan back then. And when you look last year with Mariota and Jameis Winston, who had solid rookie years that indicate they're going to be good, solid pros, I don't think as much was asked of them as is going to be asked of Dak Prescott, because that defense is suspect.
You just brought up Mariota, and I was going to ask you about Tennessee and the idea that they want to run what they're calling exotic smash mouth when it comes to their offensive attack this year. The Titans are in a tough division, and yet I feel like they're making steps in the right direction. What are you expecting out of Tennessee and out of a second year of Mariota?
Well, I like Marcus Mariota. I think he and Jameis Winston showed that they can play in this league. Obviously, they've got to take the next step. That description of their offense fits Michael Larkin. It goes back to his Pittsburgh Steelers day. He ultimately wants to be a smash-mouth running program. But obviously, when you have Marcus Mariota and some of the things he does, they're going to open it up a little bit. It really is all about Marcus Mariota and how much better he's going to fit. Yeah, remember, they made the transformation to Mike Mularkey as the head coach because he was the offensive coordinator to develop Marcus Mariota. This happened to him in Jacksonville when he took over as the head coach to obviously expand on the resume of Blaine Gabbert, and it didn't happen. So, this is going to be a similar scenario. Tennessee and even Mike Mularkey, their fate's going to be tied to how much improvement, obviously, Marcus Mariota makes.
We're going around the NFL with the coach, Brian Billick. He's on Twitter, at Coach Billick. He's brought to us each week by our friends at SeatGeek. Coach, when you look at the Carolina Panthers, we know, first of all, it's always difficult to get back to the Super Bowl in back-to-back years, regardless of whether you win or lose. But how much of their success last year, going 15-1, can they duplicate this year?
Well, that's a tall task to think that you're going to go 15-1. But this is clearly, in my opinion, the best team in the NFC South. This could be one of the top two teams, maybe the top team, even personnel-wise, in the NFC. There's no reason to think that they can't get back there. Cam Newton, there's no reason to think that he's not going to turn around and again have an MVP year. He's got the credentials. They're going to stay committed to the running game if they can stay healthy. To get Kelvin Benjamin back should be a huge plus. And the defense, the front seven in particular. Now, the secondary has gone through some change. And so those that want to look at Carolina and say, gee, what's going to happen with Carolina this year? Are they going to have that Super Bowl losing jinx and not even get back to the playoffs? If they do have some difficulties, it's likely going to be in the secondary. They drafted their second-round pick. James Bradbury is going to start for them. They had enough losses in the secondary compared to last year's team that that's an area you're going to have to watch.
One of the teams that could threaten them in the NFC is Arizona. Obviously, health matters for all 32 teams, but when you have an older quarterback like a Carson Palmer, when you have Larry Fitzgerald, you obviously need them out on the field. But do you feel like Arizona is the best threat to the Panthers in the NFC?
Absolutely. They're a veteran team, and that staying healthy is true of every team. How good is Carolina going to be if they lose to Cam Newton? So you don't wish that on anybody. And so this is going to be a good football team. It's a veteran team. I know the preseason wasn't particularly dynamic, but nobody cares. You remember the Indianapolis Colts days and their heyday with Peyton Manning. They typically went 0-4. The preseason was just not going to be important. So it's important, don't get me wrong, but the final outcome, nobody really cares. Nobody pays attention to. I think Arizona has all the pieces in place. Yes, you got to keep Carson Palmer healthy. Can they indeed build on what was a record year for him? But most of all, I really like what they're doing in the running game. Bruce Arians, let's go back again to your Pittsburgh roots, much like the Mike Blarkey. He wants to run the ball, even though you got Larry Fitzgerald and Michael Floyd. They want to run the ball. If David Johnson stays healthy, this guy's pretty good now. I know Bill Belichick is saying, well, he's no Marshall Faulk, okay. But he's not bad. Because David Johnson's pretty good. They want to run the ball well. And if they can continue to build on that aspect of it, they're going to be right where they were last year.
You talk about how difficult it is to get back to the Super Bowl, win or lose, and Denver's going to try to do it with a seventh-round pick starting at quarterback. How exactly do they do the fans have confidence in the idea of trying to get back to the Super Bowl with such an unproven quarterback?
Well, you're still in the glow of the Super Bowl championship. They're going to raise that banner, and so, yeah, confidence is going to be high, and it should be. They're going to play great defense. You know, typically, you look at this and you'd say, okay, they made the determination. We're going to play great defense. We're going to run the ball. And all our quarterback has to do is not throw 23 interceptions like our quarterbacks did last year. And I think there's a little bit more to that. The biggest part of that equation to me is, are they going to run the ball then? Because they desperately need to. We'll find out about Trevor Siemian. I think he's a placeholder for Paxton Lynch. Trevor Siemian, I think, could be a solid backup in this league. I followed him in his college career, which you see in the preseason. I don't see those qualities necessarily to say this is going to be a frontline championship caliber quarterback. I certainly could be wrong. And I think Dak Prescott, I think when they went out and drafted Dak Prescott and they let Brock Osweiler leave, that was your ultimate plan.
Last one for you, Coach. As you look at the Patriots, obviously they'll have the first 4 weeks without Tom Brady. They have a schedule that looks like, even with Garoppolo as a game manager, if he doesn't make mistakes, that 2-2 is pretty easy, maybe even 3-1. What are your expectations for the Patriots while they wait for Brady to come back?
Well, there's any number of reasons. With a better New York Jet team, with what looks to be an improving Miami Dolphins team, I think a Buffalo Bill team that could really explode onto the scene. But I've been burnt on this one too many times. I'm not picking against Bill Belichick. I usually say I'm not picking against Bill Belichick and Tom Brady. The fact that they still have they're still going to have 12 games when we're done to deal with whatever happens in the next couple of weeks. The strength of the New England Patriots, beyond the fact that they're the New England Patriots, is you keep talking about, okay, do you have to whittle down the game plan or do you have to change the game plan for Jimmy Garoppolo? Well, that's what they do. More so than any team in the league, they morph from 1 week to the next to whatever they have to be. They're the only team in the league that will literally throw the ball 50 times 1 week and run the ball 40 times the next. So they're obviously going, they're not just at the quarterback position, but the team is used to changing its dynamics in terms of what it wants to do from week to week. Clearly, that'll be the task for them with Garoppolo, you know, see what kind of control he has of the offense, play good defense. The schedule right now looks like, we don't know how these teams are really going to play out, but right now it looks pretty manageable. So I think they're going to be in good shape.
He's the coach, Brian Billick. You find him on Twitter, at Coach Billick. He's a part of our Around the NFL here on the NFL Files podcast every single week. It's brought to you by SeatGeek. Make sure you download the SeatGeek app. You're looking for concert tickets, sporting events, a great way for you to make sure you're paying the best possible price for the tickets that you buy. It's SeatGeek. Coach, we'll talk to you again next week. Thanks.
All right, sounds good.
We're going into overtime next with Chad Brown, former NFL linebacker. Stick around.
Overtime.
This week on Overtime, it is 15-year NFL vet Chad Brown spent time with the Steelers, with the Patriots, as well as the Seahawks. And so Chad joins us here on the NFL Files podcast. And Chad, a six-pack of questions for you. And we start here. Question number one, what's the worst part of the opening week as a player?
That your conditioning isn't at as high of a level as it will be later in the season, and you never really get your second win during the course of the ball game.
So you're maybe not quite where you want to be, and so you start feeling it late in the game?
You know, you feel it early. Late in the season, you know, you go out there and you play, and somewhere, you know, halfway through the second quarter, you're breathing relaxed and you kind of get that second win kind of feeling. The first week or two of the season, you are out there struggling. You've play the full preseason, you've done all the conditioning, it's just your body is just not ready for a full 60 minutes of NFL high-level regular season football.
Nice. All right, question number two in our six-pack. You spent some time here during training camp with Tennessee. What was that like?
It was an incredible experience, and to contrast that where I was last year I did an internship with the Seattle Seahawks, obviously one of the best teams, one of the best franchises in the NFL, versus this year with the Tennessee Titans coming off a 3-13 season. them really trying to build something. I think they will be able to build something good there, but a very different experience, one team that's already there, one team that's trying to be there. And also, maybe the best part of the entire experience was getting a chance to essentially shadow Dick LeBeau for an entire month. Dick LeBeau will be in his 58th year in the NFL this season. So to shadow a guy like that with that much NFL experience was literally a priceless experience. And as good of a coach as Dick LeBeau is, he's in the NFL Hall of Fame. He's an even better human being and a better person. I really enjoyed that experience and that time with him.
As you sit right now, Chad, removed from the game, what's the one thing you would go back and tell your NFL rookie self right now if you could do it?
Don't ride the highs and the lows. It's each season is a marathon, and if you are constantly riding the highs and the lows, you're going to wear yourself out emotionally. There's only so much emotion in the human body that you can tap into that reservoir during the course of the season. And to try to be as steady as you can during the course of the week and after the game and while you're watching film is going to allow you to keep as much as you have in the reserve for the game time when you actually need it. Young Chad, you know, always left the game either extremely happy or extremely sad. And come to find out when you watch the film on Monday, it wasn't as bad as you thought it was, nor was it as good as you thought it was. So just try to be steady, Eddie. Keep your emotions in check so you can tap into them when you actually need them on Sunday for those 3 hours.
Question number, let's see here. I'm on four here now for Chad Brown. He's on Twitter at ChadBrown94, part of overtime here. Chad, your favorite quarterback that you ever got to sack, your favorite quarterback to hit?
Man, you know, I've been lucky enough to hit a lot of them. sacked Peyton Manning, strip sacked Peyton Manning, sacked Joe Montana. So that's probably the, you know, most iconic of the quarterbacks who I sacked. But, you know, if there's was a quarterback who's played, you know, in the 15 years I was in the NFL, there's a strong chance I got to sack him. You know, if I were to choose just one, I probably would go with Joe Montana just because I consider him to be the greatest quarterback of all time. So what better prize than to get the greatest of all time?
Question number five, Chad, would you trade your college national championship at Colorado back in 1990 for a Super Bowl ring? It's a tough one, isn't it?
No. It's a very tough question, but I'll give the answer no. The NFL, while winning a Super Bowl, which I've never won, I'm sure is an amazing experience. To do the national championship in college is different just because NFL, you're a professional, and in college, you're an amateur. And so for a college athlete, you win that championship with guys who you spend all your time with. These are literally your brothers. It's not just your teammates like it is in the NFL. These are literally your brothers. My roommate was on the football team. I spent all my time with those guys. You know, so because of that bonding experience, because of who we are, even now later in life, you know, I will be at those guys' funerals. You know, I'll be there when their, you know, children or grandchildren are born. Because of those types of relationships, I think that makes the national championship in college sweeter than a Super Bowl championship would be.
Last one for you, Chad, in our six-pack of questions. Do you have a pick for who's going to win the Super Bowl this year?
You know, I do not. You know, I don't get into that. It's always fascinating to me, whether we're talking college football or pro football. You know, the folks who do that, and I respect those who give it a shot. There's just so much football to be played. So many wacky things can happen. You know, the Broncos won the Super Bowl last year, you know, with one of the worst offenses in Super Bowl winning history. There were points late in the season where it looked as if they might not even win their division. So, you know, so many things have to happen for it all to line up. So my guess would literally just be an absolute guess. You know what? But just for the sake of doing this, I'll go with the Seahawks on the NFC side, and I'll go with the Steelers on the AFC.
Very nice. There he is, Chad Brown. He's our guest for overtime this week on the NFL Files. He's on Twitter at ChadBrown94. Make sure you give him a follow. Chad, thanks.
Thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
This has been a Sports Show production. For more team-specific podcasts, visit sportsshow.com.